The easy way around that is to, first of all, if you're an avid content consumer, then you should already know that it doesn't really matter whether or not you have something to say. There's always an audience, right? And so the goal is to now understand the audience's expectations. For example, if you want to do inspirational content, right? There are a lot of people doing that. So the smart thing for you to do is find out what all the other people are saying. How do people respond to that type of content? And if possible, find out gaps, maybe areas that a lot of these people aren't covering. And then you now have to decide, all right, so I've seen this gap and I'm going to fill it. And then just start with creating for your friends.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the show. Today, our guest is David. How are you doing, David?
I'm good. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. And I appreciate having you here on the podcast. So before I talk about you, I love in every episode to let the guests talk about themselves. So can you please introduce yourself to the audience and what you do?
Okay, so my name is David. I write a newsletter called Communique. I've been writing the newsletter for 2 years, over 2 years now. I started it in the middle of lockdown. So I've been
Wow.
a journalist for a long time. And I decided I needed to see some type of analysis of the media of the continent. So I live in Nigeria. I needed to see some type of analysis of the media in Africa. And so I wasn't seeing that. And I thought to myself, why not start something, start a column or something like that? And my friend convinced me to just open a Substack instead. It gives you more editorial control instead of subjecting yourself to another publication's house style and editorial restrictions and all of that. So I decided to open a Substack and it's been going pretty good. Yeah.
So you now you almost have like 25,000 subscribers on Substack.
Yeah. Yeah. So I
That's
have
insane.
25,000 subscribers on Substack and LinkedIn. So I publish newsletter on two platforms, Substack and LinkedIn. So I basically
Now,
just
LinkedIn, you
create a
have like
platform.
more than 80,000 followers, right?
Followers, yes. I have a lot of followers on LinkedIn. So I use that to my advantage. Open the Substack, the newsletter on LinkedIn, and the bulk of the followers are on LinkedIn and then some are on Substack.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Like the interesting thing about LinkedIn and Substack is that there are a lot of ways to monetize them. There are a lot of ways
Yes.
to get traction. And
Yes.
the reason I'm doing this podcast is because I want to help a lot of people start their journey this year. We have an aim of helping 10,000 people start their content creation. And we know it's really difficult to start creating content, whatever you are, because there are a lot of things that are confusing. And there's also the mindset part of it, like people who are kind of afraid to create stuff and publish.
Yes, true.
Can you tell us a bit about the beginning of your content creation? Like, how was it for you, and what kind of like fears or challenges you had at the beginning that you had to overcome?
I wouldn't say I had any fears per se, because I've been writing for a very long time. I started writing professionally in 2013, so it's almost 10 years now.
Okay.
And that's a very long time to practice. I had a blog before. I ran that blog for 6 years. And so that gave me confidence. I've become used to how people respond to certain types of articles and certain types of content online. And so I took a lot of the lessons from that experience. And I was a journalist for half a decade, like 5.5 years. So I guess you just get used to some things that are easy for
Yeah.
you to do. Writing or creating content is not the problem. The problem for me has always been figuring out how to grow the audience, grow an audience properly, right? So that's the major issue, growing the audience for me. But at the same time, I understand people who are afraid to start because they don't know how people are going to respond.
Yeah.
They don't know if they don't know if they really have something to say. And so I guess the easy way around that is to, first of all, if you're an avid content consumer, then you should already know that it doesn't really matter whether or not you have something to say. There's always an audience, right?
Yeah.
And so the goal is to now understand the audience's expectations. For example, if you want to do inspirational content, right? There are a lot of people doing that. So the smart thing for you to do is find out what all the other people are saying. How do people respond to that type of content. And if possible, find out gaps, maybe areas that a lot of these people aren't covering. And then you now have to decide, all right, so I've seen this gap and I'm going to fill it. And then just start with creating for your friends. Very simple. As a matter of fact, maybe just produce one episode of a podcast and share with two or three friends. Get their feedback. As opposed to...
from there you can, start.
Exactly. As opposed to just publishing a podcast and putting it out there. So start the podcast or record something, a voice note, whatever it is. Share with two or three of your friends who will give you honest feedback. Not people who will say, oh, this is great, even if it is not, but people that will tell you, all right, this isn't very good and this is why it's not very good. People who will give you constructive feedback. And from there, you start to build your confidence, right? So you know that by the time you've done two or three editions or two or three episodes of whatever piece of content it is you want to put out, you've gotten really solid feedback from people you trust. Then you become more confident to put out the content. As opposed to just sitting down one day, all right, I want to start a newsletter and opening the newsletter and just putting that thing. When you do that, maybe you're afraid of the kind of reception that the newsletter will get or the kind of or the podcast will get, or maybe the YouTube channel, whatever will get. So start with people you can trust, people you will be gentle with feedback, because the internet is a very brutal place.
It's a wild place.
Right? It's a wild world out there. So you want to be sure that you have the guts and you have the stomach for the toxicity and the vitriol that may be out there. Some people may not experience that. I don't think I've ever experienced toxicity. I've never had to go through that. But very likely you're going to experience it in one form or the other. So you have to be ready to stomach it. And the way to be able to do that is to build confidence from talking to people who give you gentle feedback. Yeah, so that's how I would advise anybody who is afraid to start.
Okay, that's awesome. I want to dive deeper into your Substack and what kind of content you create there. Can you walk us through a process you go through with Substack?
Okay, so on my Substack, I publish a media and tech analysis newsletter. So like I said, I was a journalist for a very long time and I didn't see enough content that was exploring or analyzing the media, business side of media, and the strategies, the tactics, everything around the media. Traditional media, new media, creator media, whatever it is you want to call it. I didn't see enough of that. So I decided to be the person who would do that. And the newsletter is research intensive. And on the average, it takes me 6 to 9 hours to write one newsletter. It's research intensive, it's data intensive. Yeah. So I have to do a lot of reading. I have to do a lot of interviews. I have to talk to a lot of people before I can even start. And so that's where the process starts with the research, right? So I have to decide if I need primary data or secondary data I need. If it's primary data, because of where I live, there's not enough primary data readily available. So I have to do a lot of interviews. I have to read a lot of things and get maybe anecdotal evidence, talk to people, get their stories. Roughly, that takes 3 to 4 hours on average. And then I start to write. So the newsletter goes out 2 times a month, on the first Tuesday and on the third Tuesday. I gather all the data, do all the interviews I need to do during the week. And so first thing on Saturday morning, 7 a.m., I'm up. I start writing. I usually spend the whole morning on Saturday writing. If I'm not able to finish on Saturday morning, I complete it on Saturday evening or early Sunday morning. Right. So that by Monday morning, I have my first draft ready. And because of my experience, I've been doing this for a very long time. The first draft is often, I don't have to make a lot of changes. So I share the draft with my friends. I call them my editorial board, unofficial editorial board. They review it for me. And believe you me, my friends are very direct with feedback. I've written something that isn't good enough. They'll say, all right, this particular thing isn't good enough. This is why it is not good enough. You should change it, or your explanation here is not solid enough. You need to find another way around it and all that. So I have that team of people, that community. That's what I would call them. I have a community of people I can trust to give me very solid feedback. So that by Monday night, I'm done with everything I need to do. I design my cover pages myself most of the time, or I have access to Getty images. So I get an image from Getty and then I lay out everything in the back end. and then schedule for 7 a.m. the next day. So that's usually the process. And then once that one goes out, I spend the rest of the week tracking the performance. And so the next week, the next Monday, the work for the next newsletter begins. Ideally, I would like to publish every week, but just because of the nature or the quality of content that I want to put out for them consistently, I can't do weekly yet. So that's the process I go
through. Okay. And how many words you typically in one of your articles?
1,200 to 1,500, sometimes 2,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. And so mainly you focus on the tech industry, right?
Yes.
Tech and media. Okay. Because I run a YouTube channel for tech and I'm really interested in the space. It's really one of those things, yeah, that require a lot of research. I know that for sure.
Yes. Yes. And you have to be ready to see, you have to be able to see the right things. If not, that people are
going
to
know you.
Because there's a lot of attention on the tech industry right now. So if what you're saying isn't good, if it's not valuable, people are going to come for you. So you have to be ready.
Yeah. I remember making a video about like a monitor from Samsung and the whole thing was great. And I made a mistake about one stat. And oh my God, in the comments, people went crazy about
exactly.
One small piece of like exactly. Stats. It's like how many hertz for the refresh rate. I was like, oh my God. So I understand that. Yeah. David, I want to ask you more about like the tools and the services that you use to write.
Okay.
So we're talking mm-hmm. about Microsoft Word. Are you using iOS, iPad? Are you using macOS? Can you talk us through about the software that you're using for your writing and how do you go about
it? I write on Google Docs. I don't like Microsoft Word. It just doesn't feel great. I usually write on Google Docs. I map out my ideas on my topics and I just add some notes on Google Sheets. So I have all my topics on Google Sheets. I write on Google Doc. And then I use Grammarly. So I subscribe to the premium version of Grammarly. So that's what I use. I use Grammarly to edit.
Correct.
Light editing. I mean, Grammarly is not perfect, but it's very helpful. So I use Grammarly and then my friends also do some editing for me. I've been an editor before in the past. So I have a natural eyes for editing and sentence structure. And all that. And I use Canva to design my images. I think I've mentioned that before. I also have a Getty Images subscription. So once I'm done with the essay, I chop it up into digestible bits and then I design Instagram carousels also
on Canva. Yeah, Canva is my favorite too. Like I come from a background of graphic design and I stopped, like as a professional, I stopped using like Photoshop for my social media posts. I love Canva.
Canva
is so easy and fast. Yeah.
Yes.
And in terms of the research that you do about how to make the content a bit more, let's say, catchy or interesting for the reader, what's your process in terms of, I'm not sure if on Substack you care about SEO that much or not?
Yeah, so that's the good thing with Substack. You don't have to care about it.
Okay.
Because Substack.
Yeah, that was my thinking as well.
Yeah.
So it's good, but still, do you worry about that? Okay, but do you still try to figure out a way to make the articles search friendly or it's not a concern for you?
It's like, okay. So I've been a digital journalist before and SEO is a big part of being a digital journalist.
Yes.
Because people have to be able to find your content easily. At the same time, your headline has to be catchy enough for people, especially when you're sharing on social. So Substack now allows you to have a headline or a subject line that may be different from the essay title. So if you go to the settings of Substack, you can tweak the essay title. So if you want to play around that, you can. But I personally don't do that because I trust my readers and I trust my ability to come up with catchy subject lines because I also do some copywriting. But I don't have to worry about SEO with Substack. I don't have to worry about discoverability because Substack helps with that, especially with the new Substack recommendations that they have now. If you recommend some people's newsletter in your newsletter, Substack allows those people to recommend you as well. So it's a quid pro quo thing. The network effect is amazing. Where I really have to worry about discoverability sometimes is on LinkedIn because if LinkedIn users don't have their email notifications turned on for LinkedIn, then your newsletter just goes to their notification tab, right? And people can ignore their notifications sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. So that's where it gets a little tricky. So the thing with LinkedIn is you have to constantly share your content. You have to keep sharing. to be sure that people have seen it. So that's how I think about discoverability. But in terms of SEO and all that, I don't really have to worry, because a lot of the time, the people trust, people have come to trust what I write. So they know that regardless of what the headline says, this stuff is going to be really interesting, because I've been writing for a very long time, at least 15 years now. So that's a lot of time to build experience. Yeah. So I know intuitively, I know what is interesting to people. I know what people like to read. And so I just let that reflect in.
And my question that comes naturally after what you said is, how did you build that audience on Substack, like starting from zero? Which comes back to the question of like, how would you advise somebody starting today on Substack to do it?
You have to be really consistent. Right? So there's no secret. It's cliche. Whatever I'm going to say now is cliche, because whoever is listening to this already knows what they should do. First of all, you have to be ready to create consistently. I'll give you an example.
My question that can help you answer this is like, did you have an audience before Substack that you kind of brought to Substack, or you had to build from scratch on Substack?
That's a good question. So I was on Twitter for a while and then I deleted my old account. I had about 7,000 followers. Now, a part of me wishes I never did that, because my newsletter would have grown faster if that audience was still there. But the audience wasn't there. And this was during COVID-19, right? When COVID-19 struck, I took it as a chance to start afresh. So I deleted a lot of my old social media accounts and started afresh, especially on Twitter. But that affected the ability to take my Twitter audience to Substack. Because what you find with a lot of Substack writers is they take their Twitter audience to Substack or to Revue. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to grow faster. So not having that Twitter audience ready, I had to wait for 18 months before my newsletter picked up. So for 18 months, I was doing less than 1,000 subscribers. Also, I wasn't really chasing numbers, to be honest. I just wanted to continue writing. If people enjoy what I write, they will share. And that was what was happening. It was growing organically. It's still growing organically. I haven't had to pay for any advertising or anything like that to grow the newsletter. Everything has been completely organic, right? And so if I had a Twitter audience ready, it would have helped me. So for people who already have existing social media audiences and want to build their own, like their own content platform and all that, I would say take advantage of that audience. It's going to be really helpful. But if you are like me and you had to start from scratch again, then you have to be consistent and know that it's going to take a lot of time. I mean, contrast Substack with LinkedIn. LinkedIn, by the time I launched the newsletter on LinkedIn, I already had about 70,000 plus followers, right? So that helped. Once I published the newsletter, it was easy to grow it quickly to where it is right now. But it's not the same thing with Substack, because with Substack, I had to start from the scratch and then slowly, over the course of 2 years, build my audience to where it is right now.
Is your Substack a paid subscription, or is it like a combination of free and...
It's free for now. It will become paid at some point. It's free because of the market, I mean.
Yeah. Right?
It's difficult to build a subscription product in this market, because whatever dollar people are going to be giving you for content is competing with essentials, with food, right? It's competing with shelter. It's competing with lifestyle, entertainment, and all that. So do you want to put yourself in that position? If you're going to put yourself in that position, then you better be sure that you have other sources.
of course.
Right? Because options are very limited for people. But if I were in the West, if I were in the US, I would easily put my content behind a paywall. And I trust the quality of the content that people will consistently pay for it. But you're also even seeing it in the West right now, right? A lot of subscription-driven businesses like Netflix, they are suffering because there's a lot of competition now. Like, if I'm not subscribed to Netflix, then it's Amazon Prime. If it's not Amazon Prime, then it's Peacock Plus. If it's not Peacock, then it's Paramount Plus. If it's not Paramount Plus, it's Disney Plus.
Yes.
If it's not Disney Plus, it's HBO Max. If it's not HBO Max, it's Stars. So there are a lot of these options, right? And so people's income is now going to all these different places. So I personally don't think that subscription is enough to sustain a media business in this part of the world. I would much rather a hybrid model. And so what I'm
doing, how do you monetize your Substacks?
Yeah,
so sponsorship, like a subscription, a sponsorship.
Yeah, so that's what I'm going to. So I have a sponsor, but because of the insights that I also share in my newsletter, I'm able to get consulting gigs. So sponsorship, consulting gigs, and those are the two primary ways that I monetize. Now we're trying to work around a community or a network program or an association, if you will, that people can pay. It's a professional development network that people can pay for access to. So that will take on a membership model. So again, it's not smart to have just one model, one revenue model. You need to have multiple. So what we're doing is, what I'm doing it with my newsletter, and I say we because there's actually a team behind it. So sponsorship, consulting, and then we're moving, or we're adding a membership model as well very soon before the end of the year.
That's great. And I think that this kind of way is more reasonable, right? Because then you have a very filtered amount of people that want to see your content. And then if there are more people from them that want to have a consulting session with you, they can book it. And if then it's like, it's a funnel, right? So it makes sense to do it.
It's a funnel. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. David, I want to ask you more about mentorship. So have you ever had a mentor, or is there somebody that was had a big impact on your life?
Yes. So, I'm not particularly a big fan of mentorship myself, but there are people who have been very helpful, right? They've been instrumental to getting me to where I am today. So when I...
When I said mentor, I also meant book or anything else. So a person something. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. So I read a lot of books. Now I listen to a lot of audio books because time, I don't really have enough time to sit down and read a book. And frankly speaking, I don't have the patience to read a book. So I just listen to audio books and then I read articles. But I try to read articles that are difficult to understand because I think that's where a lot of the insight is, things that are difficult to understand. So I read a lot of Strategic, Ben Thompson's newsletter. I read Simon Owen's Substack. I read Brian Morris's The Rebooting. I read Troy Young's newsletter. I read a lot of books as well. I'm subscribed to Media Voices. And then in terms of audiobooks, currently I'm listening to The Social Animal by David Brooks. So it's really packed. It's a really interesting audiobook to listen to. So,
okay.
Yeah. So mostly books. And then I watch some things on YouTube, but I'm not particular to any YouTube channels anymore. So mostly I watch YouTube for entertainment, but sometimes there's some really interesting things there. I like the PBS Frontline. Yes. PBS Frontline YouTube channel, high quality documentaries. Yeah. And then I was a member of, so I got into a Substack fellowship some months ago, and my mentor was Casey Newton for the duration of that program. And we are still in touch. Casey Newton is a really, he's a top shot journalist in Silicon Valley. So he's been really instrumental to just helping me have a more global view, a broader perspective of things. So those are the things that have been instrumental to my career as a creator.
Awesome. And I believe you still have a lot of things to grow to. And I believe you're going to be very successful in the future. And you already are.
Yes.
So David, can you tell us a bit about your mindset priming? Are you familiar with the term priming? It's quoted from Tony Robbins. So basically it's like getting yourself into that mode of like high performance. So what do you do in your daily routines that get you to that stage of like really high performance, productivity, and staying positive?
Okay. So before I write a newsletter, I like to read two or three high quality pieces of content or articles before I even start writing my newsletter, because I feel like that just stimulates my brain instead of me just waking up and I just start typing. Sometimes I do that when like there's a flush, there's this gush of inspiration flowing through my body and I just want to get things down on paper. But most of the time I just come to my home office. I have a home office, which is where I am now, separate from the rest of the house. I sit down and then I try to read a few things or maybe listen to a few things. And then when I'm in the zone, I start to write. And then I typically just continue writing for hours, nonstop, because contrary to what a lot of people do or what some people do, I write and edit on the go. So I don't just dump things on paper, right? So I'm writing and I'm editing because I need to make sure everything flows. When I'm stuck, I go back to the beginning and read again. then by that time, my brain will be stimulated again, and then I continue writing. So that's usually my creative process.
So you're doing that non-straight for like how many hours, you said?
So I write typically 3 to 4 hours straight.
Wow. That's the sweet spot, right? Like, I've been reading a book called At Your Best, and there have been like some scientific research about humans in general. Like, every day we get only like few hours, like maybe four hours or maximum five, that are pure like productivity. Everything else is already like unfocused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and do you drink something like coffee or any stuff?
Oh, yeah. So I drink tea or hot chocolate. Okay. I don't really like coffee because of what it does to my body. I drink coffee sometimes, the one I want to be stubborn, but most of the time it's just tea and hot chocolate. And it just gets you, it just gets your blood rushing. And when, once you're in that zone, when, once you're in that mode, it's difficult to stop. You just keep going. Yeah.
Do you do something else to keep yourself in that zone? I really want to dive deep into it because a lot of creators suffer from this problem of starting the work and then they get distracted by, let's say, notifications on their phone or family, whatever it is.
So yes.
What do you do to keep your zone safe?
notifications are always turned off. I don't like notifications anyway, even on my phone. I don't get notifications on my phone. Except I open an app, I will not see the notification on my phone. The screen is always blank. And once I start writing, I turn on the focus mode. So I use an iPhone, I turn on the focus mode, and because I turn on the focus mode on my phone, it's on my laptop as well. I use a Mac as well. So on my phone, focus mode, on my laptop, focus mode, I'm not getting any notifications until I'm done. As a matter of fact, I don't get any notifications until the end of the workday around 5, 6 p.m. Right. And if I'm not done writing during that period, I go back and turn the notifications off again. I don't like seeing notifications when I'm writing. But at the same time, I try to take 10 to 15 minutes breaks between writing when I feel like maybe I'm stuck in a rut instead of just sitting down and continuing. Some people do it where they sit down and they power through. I don't like to power through ruts. So I take a break. So I just maybe surf my social media a bit. So I take a walk, move around a bit, play around. I have a family. So maybe I just play with my family for some time and then I come back and then I continue writing. So that's usually the flow. But in terms of maybe specific things, I don't do anything out of the ordinary because for me, the creative process is a ritual. And because it is a ritual, I hold it in high esteem. So I'm not the type of person who can just wake up. I can just be doing something in the middle of an activity. I get an idea and I just start writing. No, what I do is I take notes. Sometimes I take extensive notes, but I cannot write an article if I'm distracted or if I'm in the middle of something or if there's something else on my mind. I need my mind to be absolutely clear. Declutter.
So you're always dedicating like a specific time for that.
Exactly. So I have early morning on Wednesday, early morning on Saturday for writing. But most of the time I write on Saturday morning because that's when, you know, I don't have to worry about work and I've cleared all my tasks for the week, or I can always continue them on Monday and all that. So Saturday morning, my mind is fresh. That's when I usually write. Sometimes Wednesday, most of the time what I do on Wednesday is I just create the frame or the framework for what the article is going to look like. And then I flesh it out on Saturday.
That's awesome. I want to go back to asking you about the research for your writing, because I had a lot of trouble because I'm not a fan of writing. Like for my YouTube channel, I usually script, and the writing part is the most daunting part for me because I'm a speaker by nature, not a writer. So it's really daunting. But I want to ask you, like, how do you go about like finding some, let's say, interesting topic to talk about? So you do the research, like you said, you kind of compile the ideas or the draft, and then you start to write down what you want to say. How do you go about making those parts interesting? The hook, the second part, the paragraph, all of this stuff, it takes a lot of mental effort.
It does.
What's your secret sauce?
I don't know if I have a secret sauce, but...
Yeah. What's your process? So, that's the question.
I've been around for a while. I've been working for a very long time. And because I've been writing and working for a very long time, I read a lot. I think that's really the core of it.
Reading.
I'm a geek. I read a lot of things. I watch a lot of videos. I consume a lot of content. And so it comes naturally to me most times to be able to spot interesting storylines, to be able to find interesting ideas. It's just natural. because I've been around for a while, because I've been doing this for a very long time, it's just natural for me to be able to spot those things. And so when I'm reading or I'm listening to something, or maybe I'm even on Twitter and then I see a conversation, I'm able to spot what may be interesting about that conversation and decide, all right, this is really interesting. I'm going to write about it. And then the next part of it is now to figure out what I'm going to say, when I'm writing, So there's no method to it. It's mostly intuitive.
Okay. So David, can you tell us a bit about what would you do differently if you had to start today on Substack or LinkedIn or any platform that you engage in?
I would not delete my old Substack because it just made it more difficult. But at the same time, so I'm caught between two minds, because deleting that old account meant I could now have the presence of mind to be able to write the kinds of articles I was writing consistently. So the thing with social media is it takes a lot of your time, right? It takes up so much mental space than is necessary. And that's what that old Twitter account was doing for me. So it would have helped to grow faster, but I think it would have also diluted the quality of the content. So I don't know if there is, to be honest, I'm not sure if there's anything I would have done differently. Maybe I would have tried to grow faster than I did. I wasn't particular about growth in the beginning. Maybe that's the only thing I would have done. I would have tried to grow faster than I did.
Yeah, which brings us to your advice to somebody starting today. Now you're talking to them, not to me. So what's your message directly to them?
So pursue quality. Make sure your stuff is really good. Like, you should obsess over the quality of your stuff, because there's a lot of mediocre content out there. But at the same time, invest in growth. There are specific things that you can do to grow and to grow fast. And find out those things. They vary for different content types and different platforms. But find out what those things are and then do them. So invest in quality. But also be particular about growth, because the faster you grow, the quicker you can monetize your content. Because it doesn't really matter, even if it's niche, people care about numbers, right? Whether we like to say it or not, people care about numbers. If you have, for example, 500 subscribers, yeah, it's nice. But people will not treat you or respond to your content the same way they would to somebody who has 50,000 subscribers. There is a difference. Right. So
create authority, right?
Exactly. Invest in quality, but also invest in growth, because it is those numbers that will create social proof, and social proof is what solidifies your authority.
Absolutely. I love the message. It's really resonating with a lot of people now. David, we're going to wrap up the podcast. Can you tell us about your next projects and where can people find you?
All right. So like we're currently doing a media newsletter. But we are expanding into other areas. We are expanding into the creator economy, and we're expanding into marketing as well. So those are the projects that we are going to be pursuing going forward. Again, I'm saying we because it's a team. It's no longer just me. Those are the projects we're going to pursue going forward. We also are going to build the membership model or the network that I talked about. And for people who want to find me, you can find me on Substack. The newsletter is cmqmedia.substack.com, or find me on all social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, at David I. Adeleke. My name is consistent everywhere.
Awesome. David, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Zach, for having me.
Absolutely. Guys, see you next time.
All right. Bye.